Steve here.
And Larson.
I am here also.
No, you gotta say Dan here. You're not Poochie, you're not I am here also, you're Dan.
Dan here, hi.
There you go. See, yay! I'll just yell at you until you do it.
you should inform me, that'd be great. We're like, see, we had Larson. Dan's here as well, and I'm like, hey!
I'll start putting in a background audio, so when you say Dan here, it'll be a loud cheer. after Steve and Larson, they'll hear booze, and then... And Dan, loud cheer us.
And welcome to Going In Raw. It's the monthly wrestling podcast. Actually, it's going to be not just monthly, but apparently in 3 weeks. Isn't the next one's coming up pretty soon?
Yeah, TLC's in 3 weeks. Less than 3 weeks.
We're going to get tables, ladders, and chairs in about 3 weeks.
Ooh, I like two of those things.
But this week, we're going to talk about Survivor Series 2014, and then we're going to talk about our book of the match later on.
Yeah.
But first, Sting came back, everybody. It's Sting.
Dun, dun, dun.
A man called Sting.
I was doing a little bit of looking up. Like, everybody concurred that, or the consensus was not, in fact, his WCW music.
I was trying to tell you that last night.
No, I know, but it sounded so much like 90s WCW, that kind of... It sounded like something he would come out to back then.
Well, it sounded like a bad imitation of something he would have come out to in 1997 or 1998.
Yeah, but I mean, what's the difference? There wasn't very good music back then, so I don't know what a bad imitation is.
I told you, they should have stuck with his original WCW theme song.
Oh, A Man Called Sting?
Yeah, because no one could escape the Scorpion Deathlock.
And evidently that was true of Triple H. He could not escape the Scorpion Death Drop.
Yeah.
Which I was super hyped about. Should we start at the beginning or just talk about
Sting? Yeah, we might as well. We can just breeze through everything else and then just get to the meat.
Everything else was pretty breezy.
Yes.
The Wyatt-Ambrose match was pretty good until the end. The finish was pretty lousy, but the match itself was good.
That's because it finished two-thirds of the way through the match. We're two-thirds of the... I'll just do this now.
Yeah, I assume, Dan, you have notes again. You have the Dan notes.
Yes, I do.
Well, let's go to the Dan notes then. Where did you start off?
Well, I was watching the other Survivor Series, the one we're watching for later, right up until literally seconds before this one began. And they just finished and I swapped straight over. So I had like six concentrated hours of Survivor Series.
Oh, wow.
Both incidentally introduced as a Survivor Series you'll always remember. Do they do that for every Survivor Series?
I think so, yeah.
They do that for every pay-per-view, don't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
No, that's always the most important match ever. It's the most important pay-per-view ever.
It's just the number of times I've heard, this is the single most defining moment or the most historical match in WWE history.
It's the most important match of his career. That's the one I've heard a thousand times.
Yeah, a million times, yep. Exactly.
Just constantly stacking it on. The pressure they're under must be extortionate. there was a match or two in the pre-show which I missed because I was watching the other one. I didn't watch him either.
If it's on the pre-show, it doesn't count.
Fandango came back. I didn't know he'd left, but he came back.
Yeah.
Now he's apparently got slightly Spanish music was apparently the review I was given of him.
Yeah, apparently his gimmick now is a Latin ballroom dancer, not just a ballroom dancer.
Would that be like flamenco music? I'm not sure.
Like, salsa or...
Now he's like one of the guys in the dingy bar in Dirty Dancing. He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
That scene always weirded me out because I'm like, ew, those are the dirty people in the dirty bar. I like all the clean people, all the clean rich people.
No, man.
I was pro stuffy white person.
You were team Jerry Orbach, and
I was
team
all
Patrick
about
Swayze.
Putting baby in the corner. I was like, that Patrick Swayze is no good. the first actual match was the big tag team match.
Yes, after Vince came out and did some stuff.
Oh, that's right.
That's like I really miss it because I missed every single Raw. It's currently like the big game release month, so I missed everything this month. I'm behind on everything. But Vince came out, and it was all like, oh my god, it's Vince!
It was kind of a Raw type opening.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we talked about last night. It felt like it was just like a Raw that was on a Sunday.
I like Vince. I like he still has a lot of energy. The way he came out, the way he dismissed because the Stephanie tried to get some Vince chants going, and he was like, "No, piss off. I don't want this."
Yeah, stop. Enough with all the crap. See, I'm looking forward to right now. Vince is in that sort of weird in between stage where he still has like he's still sort of buff. He still sort of has that Vince McMahon swagger. I'm just waiting for 10 years from now. When he comes out and he's just all cranky and everything he says is, all right, cut the crap. We're going to get to the match.
And he's it all might be fewer than 10 years.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's 112 years old now. That's how old he is. 112.
Yeah, exactly. So by the time he's 122, I feel he'll finally be sort of on the decline.
Yep. It was. I do want to point out, but by the time the first match had started, three matches in Survivor Series 98 had finished.
Yeah.
I noticed that when I was looking over the results for Survivor Series, there was like really, really short match. I mean, you had to get through a whole tournament. So many short matches.
Well, then they had a 10-minute time limit for the first round, too.
Oh, yeah. But I know, but none of them went past four minutes.
None of them got close. We'll get there. Yeah. It's fine. I think that's where they set up the neat twist of the only person that can bring you back is Cena in the introduction. Which I don't like the thing of everyone gets fired. If they'd gone, two of you will be fired. That makes me think, oh, that actually might happen. Two of them could go away for a while. When they go, everybody's going to be fired, I'm like, well, you're not going to win then. You're not going to fire all these. Ryback just came back. It's not going to happen. But if they'd gone, two people would be fired, you'd go, ooh, if they do win, who's it going to be? They need to sort of lower down the threats.
Yeah,
it's like when your mom says, if I count to three, one, two, three, nothing happens. You have power. You have just been given power. The countdown is now meaningless.
That would have been cool then, because if it would have said, you know, only two people get to keep their, and then Cena has to choose who those people are.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. I figured the entire time, even past that stipulation, I thought one of two things. I was going to like, okay, well, shouldn't everybody just turn on Cena? Shouldn't everybody just do what the Big Show did? It's like, you know what? Yeah, what is defying the authority really doing for me? You know, it's like all it's doing is getting me fired. That's what I was kind of hoping. Like you had in the main event, and I'm not going to really skip ahead, but like everybody standing there and then Team Cena comes out. I was kind of hoping everybody would turn around on Cena and just start going on it for like a good 15, 20 minutes. But that didn't happen. And they said, Cena gets all the power. After that, I still figured, I was like, you know what? I still kind of think the authority is going to win. Like they sort of, the WWE, like that's what sort of surprised me about last night in general is that they just tend to sort of drag storylines out as long as they possibly can, even in the face of something that's super hot. And so when we look at this tag team match that started off the show, you have Mizdow winning. And I was like, oh my God, they're actually taking something that's hot right now, the Mizdow thing, and they're going to turn that into like what could possibly be a really good storyline.
Yep. Mizdow is my favorite thing. I love Mizdow. Yeah. It's the whole setup of the stuntman is the person you're not even supposed to notice because they're supposed to be, you're supposed to go, oh, it's still that person. But him being, when he was raising his arms to get cheers and then Miz was doing it and getting booed, I was pissing myself laughing.
Yeah.
That's such a wonderful setup. It was glorious.
It helps Mizdow that the Miz is genuinely not a work, but genuinely disliked by the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one likes the Miz.
Yeah. It's crazy because you have two people that are diametrically opposed. You've got the internet favorite, like the Marks love, and I love, who doesn't love Sandow?
Yeah.
But he's not like and everybody knows, man, this guy, why is this guy getting buried? He is great. Mm-hmm. And then you have Miz, who has a history of just being the least charismatic person ever to get a massive push. Yep. And you have them teamed up together, and they're showing exactly why that's the case, why they love Sandow, because he's just reflecting somebody who doesn't have an ounce of charisma, but they're both running with it, and that's exactly why it makes a great team up.
Yeah, it's beautiful. They've hit gold.
They have, literally now.
Well, bronze, there was a really cute moment in it when because Mizdow I do love, but when he was going for the pin and he tries to get in, he just catches his foot on the bottom, on the rope and didn't get it and then does it again. And I'm like, oh, he's so excited that this is happening. It was just insane. Yeah.
And then the fact that he did, there was no immediate, there was like, I mean, obviously you see the Miz and the Miz, his reaction was fantastic when Mizdow got the tag and the pin. His reaction, like I can see it in my face right now, that just sort of stunned, oh my God, what's he doing? And Sandow plays it so beautifully oblivious and wantingly subservient to the Miz.
Yeah.
And he didn't even care that he didn't have both the belts in his hands. He was just happily going along with it.
There was a couple little glances between him where Mizdow was like, where's my belt? And then ran, just like, okay, I'm running on with it.
But usually in the WWE, nothing is a little glance. There's no, I know, nothing, I know. Subtle. Nothing that's subtle. What's yeah, that's what's great about it.
Oh, I think by the end of it, Miz was cracking up slightly, though. He was laughing a little bit out of character when he was on the belts and getting booed and Santos getting cheered. It just could see him just going, oh, this is the stupidest thing. How is this happening? But it was quite a fun match as well.
Yeah, it was. There was a lot. I mean, one of the great things is when a lot of the action is outside the ring.
Yeah.
Then you know that a lot of good things are going to be happening. It was funny because Mark noticed a dude we were watching with when the little guy.
El Torito.
El Torito. Yeah. When he did his spot. Jumping out of the ring, mm-hmm. like Cody, who, you know, has been around wrestling since literally he was a kid. He was the one guy who caught his head
because everybody else
caught his body. And then Cody was like, hold on, let me get his head. And, you know, basically just save him from becoming paralyzed.
Yeah.
But no, a lot of great spots, a lot of really, really good spots. I was usually I'm very anti-Uso, but I thought even they did. I mean, they're always fun to watch in tandem because they're a good together tag team when they do moves. I just find them incredibly boring and annoying. But
that's the one good thing about Survivor Series. I mean, granted, this year it was kind of a gift and a curse, is that generally the matches get room to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
They give them time, which is great for the tag match or the final match. For the Divas Survivor Series match, perhaps not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
I thought it was a fun match, though. I thought Cody had some, off the top of my head, Cody had some good moments. Goldust had some good moments. They usually do. Uso,
and new face paint, didn't they? Stardust, new face paint.
Yeah, Cody had the red and the
gold.
Yeah,
I thought they looked cool. Red. I was telling Larson, I was like, I love, number one, I really do like themed tag teams, and all these guys are all themed, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like themed tag teams in the first place, but they have taken this to such a new level of of brand unity that.
How would you explain these four tag teams to someone who doesn't watch wrestling? So it's these two brothers who are completely crazy, insane, and they kind of wear spandex and stuff. There's this guy, and he's sort of got a stunt double with him that copies everything that he does. I'm not entirely sure about that. Then there's these two over here. Well, they're little matadors, and they come with their own little personal tiny ball guy. And then there's Samoans, and they're the sanest people in this match.
that is
gone,
true.
Yeah, it's kind of
the matadors are they're the easiest to explain, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're matadors. That's all you have to say.
Yeah, they're matadors. Okay.
Plus tiny bull.
Plus the tiny bull.
With their own bull, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a mentionable outfit. That's easy to explain. but yeah, moving on. Let's see. What came next? Oh, Lord.
Adam Rose shield stuff, I wrote down. He shielded some stuff. He was selling some toys, and then that got into a match. I refer to him here. Adam, please send me back to NXT Rose.
Yeah, I did because.
Everyone, when Adam Rose came into it, everyone was like, oh, he's the best, we love him, and I've not seen him since. He sort of just turns up and it's like, here's the thing, and that's it.
I think he's on Main Event and the shows that run exclusively on the network. I don't think he really wrestles on broadcast TV often.
On this pay-per-view.
Yeah, I know. They had that big angle with the bunny that they have to, you know.
At some point, you'd think that at some point they would resolve that angle with the bunny.
This is a case, as you said, of them dragging things out too far.
Yeah, I think it's just, I think they just need, see, I'm okay with it in this case just because, or I understand it rather in this case because I really honestly just think they have nothing else for him to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. Well, whatever. I like that Titus O'Neil showed up though because I love Titus.
Oh, Titus was hilarious.
Yeah, he's always hilarious.
He's good fun. Yeah, and not quite sold on the bunny as a thing. Yeah. It's very much that it was someone that was sort of following him around, isn't it? It's the same storyline as the Miz and Miz Dalva done wrong.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing. It's like, here's the thing where no charisma and some charisma, and the other two are, yeah.
It was also kind of weird that they just, came out. We were also saying, shouldn't this have been, a segment on SmackDown or Main Event or something? Mm-hmm. Because, you don't, it's not very often that you go to a pay-per-view and then you set up mid-show, you set up what should have been an opening card match. That should have been on the pre-show, but they literally establish it midway through the show and then have the match. I don't know if that, that was just odd booking right there.
I wonder if it's a situation where they were looking at the card and they said, we have a 5-minute or a 10-minute gap here we need to fill, so let's just toss another match in there. Who doesn't have a match?
Yeah,
the bunny.
Just, I'm just surprised that they didn't do that like before. Like, I mean, they had. I would have thought like Swagger versus Cesaro is more of a pay-per-view quality, potential pay-per-view quality match, but that was on the opener.
Maybe Vince really likes the bunny.
That is very likely. That is extremely likely. Hey, you got to put that bunny on this show. What he shows
kids
up to the arena.
Love the bunny.
Yeah, he's not like fully in control, so he didn't have the book sheet in front of him. He shows up to the show. Wait a second, I don't see the bunny on here. Well, Vince, you know this is Survivor Series. This is a
we need
deal.
The bunny on this show. Damn it,
the bunny is a big deal. Damn it, put the bunny on the show.
What else will JBL have to talk about?
Exactly.
He'll treat us in the early matches. We need something to get him through the rest. How many matches were there last night? There was one, two, three.
Six?
I'm counting four matches that I count. There were six, but there was two that were incredibly short. So technically four main matches.
One of them that was not incredibly short, of course, was the Divas clusterfuck match.
Yeah.
But I didn't care because Paige was in it, and I love Paige. She needs to be in my shower.
I like it.
Goodness.
I love Paige. She's the best. Why?
Why?
Well, Dan, when a guy and a girl get together and they like each other.
You make them wash because you think they're dirty.
Well, she's just getting out of a match, so she probably has, like, chafed, shitty asshole. Nobody likes that.
This match. Well, like, every time they brought... Because I don't really pay attention to the Divas, because they tangent off into Total Divas, and I lose it. Like, in this match, I was sort of... You know when you've just eaten a lovely meal, and you're sitting in front of the TV, and you're just sort of zoning out of life? That's sort of what I was doing with this match, a fairly large amount. But as they were bringing the Divas in, I was like, they're making these up. There's not that there's many Divas.
Yeah.
It's just, they're just, they've just got a random name generator, and they're just giving... They just go, get out there. Put on this thing, and go. I swear that was what was going on, because I didn't know how many there were. We it do have, actually, really... my favorite ever commentary comeback from King, which was, I can't remember who said these lines, it was two lines between two of the commentators, was about Emma when she tripped over the start. Was, she could trip over cordless phones, and then, do they still have cordless phones? Thanks for that one, King.
Cordless phones. <That's okay. laughs> I haven't heard that since, like, the late 90s. And it was a really long match.
Yeah,
it was
not like, anything. Nothing happened.
Paige
shouted a lot. I like how Paige shouts.
That's the only thing about her that bugs me. If she comes into my shower, I'll go, okay, you can't do the shouting thing, though. Not in the shower.
That'd be great. Pick up the soap! And then just kill you.
Pick up the soap. This is my shower!
This is my shower! Yes. I know. I like that. That actually gives her something, because everybody else is really silent and strange. Or crazy. The Divas tend to only come in two flavors, and it's crazy ex-girlfriend or man. And that's like the two. And we only really have the first one nowadays.
That's all they can muster up when it comes. Like, they don't really give the females much to do. Like, it's always...
No. Which is always a detriment to the division, because you're not invested in any way in the matches whatsoever.
Well, I don't think you don't have a lot to work with. That's the problem. That's one thing I like about Paige, is that I thought she's... regardless of what you think, I think she is a decent wrestler.
No, she's not bad. She just works slow in compared to AJ, who tends to work who can work really fast.
Well, AJ is just the standout. Like, AJ's just really good. And I think Paige can be good. Like, when Paige had like a three-match series with Natalya, and Natalya is a decent wrestler.
Natalya's really good. She's the one that teaches, instructor at NXT.
They had like a couple of really, really good, decent matches on Raw a couple months ago. But otherwise, look at who you're working with. You're not, I mean, I've heard that Emma was good in NXT as a wrestler, but otherwise,
she tripped over the ramp going down.
Yeah, I think
it's a flat surface.
Though. That's
not even
gimmick.
I would trip over on that.
But, like, there's nobody. And I think they're in this weird transitionary period where, you know, you're in NXT, they're bringing in actual female wrestlers who know what they're doing. But we still have the remnants of sort of the Total Divas era, you know? Like, I mean, I know that's a show now, but, like, there was a period when they were just, like, look at the Funkadactyls, like Naomi and Cameron. They were just brought on as dancers for Brodus Clay. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not, I don't think they're ever really supposed to be wrestlers. But they turn them into that. Layla, she's been around forever, but she sucks.
Yeah.
Summer Rae, I thought she was supposed to be good from NXT, but I haven't really seen her wrestle that much. No. I think they're just in this weird transitionary phase, like, between having what they thought were sort of just more eye candy female glorified female valets, and actually trying to build up the Divas division. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so we're getting these like weird matches where they don't really know what the fuck they're doing. It'd be nice if they actually built some storylines with these girls.
Yeah, I think that's the thing too.
That was the thing about Paige and AJ, is that they were actually building some decent stuff there, and they were having them do some things. But you know, you can only go so far with just two people.
Yeah, but because I was just watched the Monday Night Raw thing about the Divas. That was the most recent one. It was the Diva stuff, and they just looked all different and interesting. I mean, most of the Divas we have at the moment are really interchangeable. Like Lita was just doing flips. I was like, why doesn't anyone do that? I'd love to see that. That would be great. And there's no one sort of doing that thing.
The thing about that Monday Night Wars is that Lita. I mean, I know Trish Stratus made her mark, but Larson, do you remember Trish Stratus ever actually being a decent wrestler?
No, she wasn't that good of a wrestler. I mean, towards the end of her career, she got better, but early on, she was not good.
Lita was really, really good.
Yeah, she was.
She was a damn good wrestler. Like, she could have legit been, if they had, I guess they did have, they had the cruiserweight division back then. She could have been, if it wasn't so stacked, they could have tossed her into the cruiserweight division.
Yeah.
And she could have held her own, just like Chyna held her own for a second in the Intercontinental program with the guys. Lita could have been with the guys. She was a good, good wrestler, but there was nobody else. Like, the Divas, maybe there were a couple others, but Trish Stratus was not a good wrestler.
No, Sable wasn't a good wrestler either.
Sable was a terrible, but
Jacqueline? She was good.
She was good. Yeah, she was
really good.
The thing about Sable is that they taught her how to do a powerbomb.
Yeah.
And even on guys. And that was impressive. Like, the fact that she was able to pull that off.
Yeah.
That was, and not kill anybody, that was kind of impressive. But otherwise, they kind of glorified the Divas division past where it really should have been. Like, it was all about, I don't know, besides Lita wrestling, like, it was all about, like, you know, showing off TNA, basically.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Which is what they've got people to switch over. That was their cunning strategy. Like, what do we get to switch people over? Interesting story. How about boobs? Boobs! Yes! No one's thought of that one before.
I did know you're exactly right. I did love that was one quote that sort of Kevin Nash had that was spot on. He was like, we had standards and practice guy in our writer's room, and they had Jenna Jameson in a bathtub with Val Venus. Where's the demographic going to go?
Yeah.
You know, that was exactly right.
Yep.
It's really, really long. Oh, it's funny because I'm looking at the match on Bleacher Report, and they gave it a D+.
Oh, the Diva one?
Yeah.
That plus is always unnecessary in a D. If you got a D, it's like, you know what? You've suffered enough with this grade. But a D plus is like, you almost didn't fuck up, but you did.
Yeah.
Sorry.
What earned it a plus?
Occasional cool spots. There was an occasional cool spot in this match, including, and I agree with this, Naomi's amazing rear view finisher.
Oh, yeah.
Because she used her butt to finish people off, which I think is great.
Yeah.
Weird.
Naomi's good.
She's okay.
She's got some good moves.
Well, she's athletic though.
Yeah. I like her butt. let's see here. Next up, we had unless there was something in between. I'm not sure. We had Dean Ambrose versus Bray Wyatt.
Nope.
And were there any?
Okay. 17 minutes in. Dean Ambrose versus Bray. I actually kept notes on the time because there were so few matches.
Nice.
It was an hour. The other two. Sort of.
I think it's good. It's a good match. I think. Right?
Yeah, it was pretty intense. It just stopped a bit, like, too early.
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't have the spot that it... See, I think that's the problem. Dean Ambrose, this is the problem. Dean Ambrose is a true Attitude Era wrestler.
Yes.
In a day when you can't do Attitude Era stuff.
Yeah.
If you watch the Hell in the Cell match, is a prime example of this. That guy would have gone off the top of the cell.
Yeah.
He would have. And he would have been happy to do it, but you can't do that. And so they did this choreographed, which was cool in its own right, I guess. But, you know...
It could have been delivered a bit crisper, it felt like. I know what you mean.
Yeah, it could have been. And there... I don't know. If you're gonna... If you can't jump off the top of the cell, then find something completely different to do, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But I thought that this match, I thought... The build-up to it was so lackluster that it... underwhelmed me from the get. Like, I was like, well, okay, I don't really care about what's happening, even though I really, really like these two characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't really care, but it was a decent enough match, I guess.
I mean, in terms of the action and the pace of it, it was barring the main event, probably the best yeah. match of the night. It was just the finish was awful. I mean, yeah. if they had a good finish, even if it was someone even if no one won,
yeah,
it would have been a
maybe that was
fine
it.
Match.
Yeah, maybe that was it. If you climb a ladder, you gotta jump off it.
Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah. Because I wrote that down. I thought, he's either going to jump off and it'll be stupid but awesome, or not, and it'll be disappointing and safe.
Yeah.
He didn't even push the ladder. Yeah. He teased push. It's a ladder. I could have a ladder pushed on me. I'm covered in it. Just push the ladder. Just please, if you set that up. Because otherwise you're just going, hey, we're in a ring and there's tables, ladders, and chairs. It's just
even
a giant advert.
Even he shrugged. Mm-hmm. Even he shrugged when he was on top of the ladder. And it makes me wonder. It really makes me wonder. That look on his face kind of said to me, he might have gone backstage and said, hey, you want to hype this up? Let me jump off the ladder onto him.
Yeah.
And I bet they were both down for it, and they were probably like, can't do that. Don't do that. It's too much.
We have to save that for TLC. That's the time of year we can do Attitude Era stuff, but
they probably told him, it's like, well, why would anybody tune in for TLC? To see more of that, you know?
Exactly. One spot is not a match.
Yeah, exactly. But, so, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. It was a good match. I just felt the build-up and, the finish. I thought I was telling Larson this yesterday, I'm not huge into, oh, your dad is in jail? Well, then we're going to fight because I just said that, you know?
Yeah.
I need a little bit more. I need more than that.
But to be fair, all you have is Bray have just gone, ha-ha, you didn't get to beat up Seth Rollins because of me, nucky-nucky-nya-nya. And that would have been better set up. And he would have gone, okay, then you die. Because that's what Ambrose does. He points himself in a direction and fires himself at the person.
Yeah. Or like, what if Bray was like, I sold your dad drugs and that's why he's in jail. That'd be terrible. But I shouldn't book. I don't know. I just needed something else. I hate that stuff. It was the same way I was telling Larson. It was like the same way when Chris Jericho and CM Punk were feuding because like Jericho was saying, your mom's a drug addict or something. Or
your dad's a drunk.
Your dad's a drunk and all that kind of stuff. It's like, sticks and stones, who cares? I need something more. I need you to do something to me before we have a match. So I don't know. It was a good match, but the build-up and the finish kind of put me off.
Yeah, all they need to do to set up Bray versus Ambrose is have Ambrose still going after Rollins, but have Bray interrupt him all the time.
That would be, because
he snaps and just goes, okay, you die. You have to die before I can get to Rollins, because I don't see Ambrose ever leaving Rollins alone ever in the history of anything
They have to blow the roof off WrestleMania when they have their match.
Yeah.
That's going to be, that's going to be really good. And see, that's the kind of motivation I'm talking about, is that the Ambrose versus Rollins is so great because there's a storyline that we saw develop from the beginning of the Shield all the way through to now we know because we've seen it. You can't just have Bray Wyatt on the mic saying something that we haven't seen.
It's show, don't tell, the very first ever
rule
of
exactly
script
right. Yeah. You're exactly right. Yeah.
We had a year of loving the Shield, even slightly more than that of loving the Shield. And then when they broke up, we felt the pain and we want the bloodlust. And so all they need to do is Bray just go, I'm with Seth Rollins and I'm looking after him now. Just because it'll make you angrier. And if you're angrier, then something hillbilly garbage.
Yeah.
Stuff he says.
The analysis here from Bleacher is great because it's exactly what we're talking about. It says, in theory, I love the Bray Wyatt character. Something is missing, though. And that's the thing. It's like there is actual... It's like with the John Cena thing with their feud, that sort of made sense because...
Yeah, he worked pretty everybody, well with Cena.
Everybody wants to know when is Cena going to turn heel, and Bray is that cult figure who's going to make that happen.
Yeah.
And so that was... That's the big question. Here, there was no really big question. It was just... All right, what do you guys want to do? I don't know. I'll talk about his dad. He's in jail. Okay.
Yeah, well, because Bray Cena is Batman Joker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the setup of that. It's the I don't mind dying if it turns you evil because then I've won.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's Bray. But with Ambrose, Bray, it's like, I am Bray Wyatt and you're Dean Ambrose and fuck it.
Yeah, let's just go crazy.
Your dad smells. Yeah.
Even when Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan had their thing, that was great because Daniel Bryan joined the family.
Yeah.
And then I remember the payoff. Yeah, I think it was at a Raw main event.
It was, yeah.
And the
cage match.
Oh, my God, and the crowd went insane. And I was going insane at home when that happened. Yeah. That was something we saw.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
That's what you can do. You can't just go, here's an off-screen thing, and I'm going to tease you about it. It's this thing happened. Yeah. I took this away from you. Do you want vengeance? Yes, no.
Yeah.
I wonder if in the aftermath of the Cena-Bray program, which went pretty well, it seemed like, or at least the reception of it was was pretty positive.
Yeah.
That if they kind of went to Bray and said, okay, just your motivation for every feud now is the same thing, because it was kind of the same deal with Jericho, where they had a beef over something, and it was kind of ill-defined, and Wyatt would just kind of say the same stuff, and apparently, you know, now he's doing the same thing with Ambrose. I wonder if that's just his direction.
I well, didn't get his promo. He did like a promo halfway through. So if he got the mic, it was like, "I'm going to turn you evil, Dean Ambrose," and this Dean Ambrose going, "I'm a lunatic already. What are you talking about?"
Yeah, it just makes me wonder if they have. I mean, because obviously Bray, in my opinion, is the best talker right now in the business. But it's like you can't
second,
just rely
Paul
on that.
Heyman exists. Paul Heyman
okay, Paul Heyman. Well, he's in history. He's probably the best talker. But on the roster, Bray Wyatt's up there, and it makes me wonder if they're just like, well, we know this guy can cut a good promo. We know that he, you know, he knows what he's doing with the mic. Let's just go have, you know, just talk, and you're fine, and we don't need anything else. You know, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know,
I don't know
what the deal is. You know, he was gone for a while, then he came back, and it's just same old Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, good match. I hope to see that go somewhere, and you know, table, ladders, chairs, obviously that's where they're going to go. That's going to be, I think the thing is with the gimmick of the tables, ladders, chairs, no matter what, that's going to be a fantastic match.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No matter what, I'll see those guys get in the ring. I don't care if they absolutely do nothing between now and then. That's going to be a good one.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
Next up, we have the bunny match.
It got
a better grade on Bleacher than the Divas did. It got a C-.
It was shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like, you know what? I don't care. I liked, okay, it's stupid. It's horrible. But Adam Rose did his reaction when the bunny won. It was up there with when the Miz
Mized out. Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Rose's reaction was great.
Because it wasn't anger. He was just so incredulous that it just happened. He was like, oh, what? Like, and that's a better reaction to have than being mad. It's just like, oh, come on. It's a fucking bunny. Like, he was there with us.
My comment for this was the Simpsons quote of, if you look closely, you can actually pinpoint the exact moment his heart breaks in two.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And you can see it on Adam Rose's face. I think, you know what? I know Adam Rose is a mess of a character and they don't do shit with him. But he is distinct. He is unique.
Yeah.
And he's got his voice is great. I love his character in general. Because I know in NXT, before he was Adam Rose, he was somebody else.
He was Leon Kruger?
Yeah, Kruger. I think it was Kruger.
Yeah.
And I think he was generic. I think he was just a generic sort of badass guy. With Adam Rose, I like that he has a gimmick. I mean, I like it, but it's just, he needs something else. Like, this bunny thing is just, it's terrible.
He's not bad in the ring either. For being what seems like a pretty decent sized guy, like, he looks big.
Yeah.
He moves really well.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. So.
He just needs something to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Need to get something with him.
The less said about this, the better.
Triple H pep talk. Which contains
Which
is weird seeing Rusev and flip flops chaining fight.
When you said that, they had already panned up. He was actually in flip flops.
Yeah.
This pay per view, my entire time, every time Rusev was on the screen, except obviously when they showed him with flip flops because I missed that. But I was watching him and he is hilarious when he has to deal with other people.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's not supposed to be a team player. He's fucking Rusev. He's supposed to hate every American in the thing. But, like, he was all in. He was all chanting with everybody. I thought that was great.
It looked great. When did Harper become champion? I thought it was Ziggler. This just happened, I'm assuming.
Last Raw, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they destroyed Ziggler. And so that made me think, I was like, okay, maybe Ziggler's going to turn heel. Maybe he's going to be the one to turn. Because there's the old thing, like, the Intercontinental Champion who's about to go to the main event scene, he rarely just gives up the belt. He always has to lose it, and then remember, like, Austin lost it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then moved up to the main event scene. Rock lost it, moved up to the main event scene. And so I figured, okay, maybe he's going to turn heel, you know, because the Authority is saying, well, this is what you've always wanted, your big-time main event title shot. He has the most sort of to gain from turning heel and going with the Authority because he's sort of the guy who never quite cracked a permanent main event spot.
Yeah.
You know?
But also, we talked about this too. Is if he had done that, then he would have been in direct competition with Rollins,
which would have made for a great.
It would have, but story wise, it wouldn't have made a whole lot of sense.
No, I think it would have because he would have come up and been like, okay, Now I've got competition for my spot. Let's go ahead and have this out. Like, you think you're the future. Well, I'm going to show you that I'm the future. I think they could have justified it. I think there could have been logic behind it. But obviously it didn't happen.
Yep. Never happened. Just if you have the network, I recommend going back and watching, because there's a moment in that Triple H pep talk where he looks at, when he's just saying all the things they'll never get. And he's like, if you're not champion, you never will be, and looks at Seth. And one of the kids in the audience just pisses himself laughing. This kid just has the most insane laugh. It's so funny.
I'll have to go back and watch it.
Go back and watch that bit, because it's just, oh, it's the funniest thing. This kid's just like, rah, rah. It's just, what the fuck? The kid was really tickled by the prospect of Seth never being champion.
It makes me wonder, would the WWE work so much better if it had a laugh track? Like, maybe even an unintentional laugh track.
Sometimes I think it quite does.
Yeah, yeah. Then we had AJ Lee versus the... Was this speculated?
No, then Roman Reigns came back and said, I'm coming back next month.
That's so bad, dude.
He said the word bitch. God, he's edgy.
Oh, God. That's pretty much so bad. He's a recipe for disaster, dude. That's gonna be so bad.
If they push him too fast, too soon, it's gonna blow up in their face so badly.
It's so bad because I don't know, Dan. I don't know if you saw this, but on Twitter, I guess there was a voice acting guy or an acting coach who tweeted out that he was like, "Hey, I just worked with Roman Reigns on intensity acting or something like that," that showed last night because he looked like he was acting.
Yes.
Like, he looked like he had just gone to an acting coach.
He has jumped from reading from a script to acting, though, so that is a step up.
He's jumped from trying to remember his lines to at least knowing his lines.
Yeah, he's had a month to learn those ones, so that's fine.
It's almost comical now. I wish that this was his, like, he had like a 10-year career, and it's all satellite feeds. That would be great. This is, we have live Roman Reigns. He's going to talk to us, and all he does is talk about coming back, and he never does. That'd be great. That'd be awesome. I'm sorry, but I understand the idea of keeping somebody fresh in the minds of people and building anticipation. But I'm sorry, whenever somebody's gone for 6 months or 3 months or whatever, and they just come back, that has such a bigger impact than us hearing about their progress,
I know.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's because you get those pop moments are what people remember. That's what you make whole bloody shows and YouTube montages out of.
Yeah, if you show up and beat someone's ass or deliver a great live promo, that's awesome. But if you just show up via satellite.
Oh, it's the worst.
Hey guys, Skype. How's
it going? Okay. Oh, this guy's still here. Cool.
Yeah.
But
Roman Reigns. Worst. Then we had AJ Lee's, what I think...
No, then we had Cena's pep talk. See, this is why I take notes.
Oh, man.
Cena's pep talk, which was rubbish and so not peppy at all.
What was the chant? I don't remember what chant they did at the end of his talk. Did they chant?
They all just went, "Because we're happy," and they sung that together. It was great. I don't know. Rowan was on their team for some reason, and I don't know, and he was playing with the Rubik's Cube with the sheet mask on, and I thought that was the best thing.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. He just said win, and they started chanting win.
They
that's
got very happy about that.
Yeah. And Ryback was back, and he's now a face. I don't remember him being back last pay-per-view. See, I've missed so much. It's weird. It's that slight jump to an alternate universe where some things have changed.
No, he was injured for a spell, and then they decided to bring him back for a big-time push.
In the old Ryback character.
As he used to be. Which I said, that's right, this is when I... this is when I said, or maybe it was during the match, I forget. But Ryback is somebody that, like, maybe a five-year-old son created.
It was during the match,
His character, it's because before he, like, does a splash or something, he says, "Stupid!" And that to me, I'm like, okay, that's it. That's exactly who Ryback is. He is the creator wrestler of a 5-year-old kid because he's got the big guy. That's his name on his tights and it literally says that on his tights and he calls people stupid and he's just huge, like cartoonishly big.
And he's obsessed with eating.
And he's obsessed with eating. Anymore. That's right. So I'm convinced he's the creation of a 5-year-old.
Maybe. And no hair. Hair's always hard to draw when you're a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he should. No, he
should. He just like it should just be like, you know how kids they'll draw like with crayons. They'll draw hair. It's just a big weird mass of lines. That's what he should have somehow on his head, like floating around his head. Big mass of Crayola lines.
Like iron fiber, that wire he gets. Yes,
yeah, yeah, yeah. That would work. That would work.
Yes. Then we went on to the Diva match.
Then was the Diva match.
Match. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Do we think was that AJ Lee's send off match?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so.
Is she gone? That screams to me. That screams to me. She's going to be gone for a while, because it just. She didn't do anything. There was nothing. She didn't have any part in that except for being a pawn of Nikki and Brie, and
who
to
are
me,
now best friends forever or something.
Yeah, when you're the title holder. And the WWE wants you to disappear as quickly as possible, that's the send-off they're going to give you.
Yeah.
When they want to erase you from the minds of people as soon as possible, that's what you have.
Yeah. Hang on, so, they wanted to erase it from minds, and they did that with a kiss. I don't know, have you met the internet?
Yeah, I know, but I just, it wasn't like...
That gif is everywhere now. You cannot breathe for that gif.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe she'll be back, and they'll explore the kiss. I certainly hope so. It just felt to me like a setup. Like it would be, I don't know, I'd be more, I would think more if it was like Nikki and Brie kissing.
Why am I recording this with you? Oh, God.
I don't know. I just think I thought it was a Bella moment, not an, I thought it was a Bella moment, not an AJ moment. I thought she was the AJ victim of a kiss.
I'll be perfectly honest, if I looked back at it and it actually wasn't AJ and just someone wearing an AJ t-shirt, I wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah.
It was the piss break. It's before the final one. You know, you go and I came back and it finished by then and I only saw it afterwards.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a good one. I'll see the end of this match. Oh, wait, that was at the end of this match.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. I just think, I think that's my speculation. I could be completely wrong about that.
Well, there has been some reports on wrestling dirt sheets about the possibility of her leaving. So
yeah, and yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for those rumors, maybe I would. If it wasn't for me knowing that, I would have been like, that's really. I just would have thought it was weird. There's something really weird about it.
Yeah, I thought it was weird.
Yeah. And then nothing, and then she won, and then Nikki won. So it'll be a Nikki Brie for the title thing. That is fine.
Yeah. And we don't care.
So that's why not care. Now I think it was the main event, unless, Dan, I'm incorrect and there's another pep talk. Any more pep talk?
No, that was it. That was it. All 120 right. minutes. We started. LOL Cena wins versus LOL Kane interferes. The ultimate match.
Sorry,
the
main event I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
I thought this was the best main event I've seen maybe all year. I don't know. I'm not really thinking too hard. But
there was something. Mark Henry had done a heel turn, but he didn't in the last pay-per-view. Did he actually heel turn midway through?
Yes, he did. He did, okay. I think, on, like, Raw the next night.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was he Raw. He lost in one night.
They had a tag team match against the Cody and Start and Goldust, and Mark Henry had some really thin motivation to turn on him.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it was in the last pay-per-view. It was like, whoa, he's going to turn. Because they're like, it's his best friend. It's all this. And then he didn't. And then apparently he did.
Yeah. So let's see here. Dan, what notes do you have for this match?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Ziggler's Twitter handle is @HeelZiggler.
Yes.
I like that as it came out because heel was in all caps. And most people speculating he was going to turn heel. And I like the fact he was just @HeelZiggler. I was like, ooh. Doesn't Big Show have that ironclad contract or something? How is he possibly going to get fired?
Good point.
I think they have completely, unless they bring it up tonight, that's a possibility. But I think that's what everybody talks about, is that I thought Big Show had an ironclad contract, but evidently they've just completely forgotten about that fact.
Yeah.
He was the one guy that could have like stood with Cena and been okay because he had an ironclad contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he had, like, because there's always the joke that he heel turns far too much. And I've only been watching for a year and a half, and I've seen him change so many fucking times.
Oh, yeah.
It's not
true.
He's like, we need someone to change and betray. Big Show. It's like, why would anybody be friends with this guy? it's just sort of like, in the locker room, it's like, oh, God, it's this guy. He's just no one's friend with him. And he just starts crying. And sad. And then he eats someone's sandwich and then turns back to face. He's like one of those kids who are like, oh, I'm home now. You can't get me when you're playing it. Oh, this is home. Oh, I'm not. Oh, I am. Like that.
That's exactly what he is.
He's like, he's just basically, he's on my face. He goes, I'm a heel. Just smash someone in the face of the chair. It's like, oh, now I'm a face again. Whee. Can you imagine in the locker room, there's just someone's sandwich just sitting on the side and just looks around. Heel. Face.
Now I'm a face again. I'm good.
Just removes all consequence just by changing at the right moment. That would be fun. No, I was enjoying this match. All I wrote is the order people were eliminated in.
Mm-hmm.
Which were, my first note is, Henry's dead.
Yeah, I thought that was good. Everything about this match was really cool. Like the order of elimination, it told a number of stories throughout the entire thing really well.
Yep. It did a really good job. It kept Rusev strong. I really like Rusev in this match. Normally, I'm not the biggest Rusev fan, but I quite liked him in this match.
There are a lot of things about Rusev that I don't like that I completely sweep under the carpet because there's so much about him that I do like, and it's none of it's consequential. Like, I love Lana, for one thing. I think she's fantastic. I love his theme music because it just reminds me of... I mean, a lot about him reminds me, and it's supposed to be about Ivan Drago from Rocky IV. But, and then we were talking about last night how, like, Lana's Twitter feed is just filled with pictures of her and Rusev completely out of character, but then she tweets in character. Like, they're hanging out at a Clippers game, and he has, like, a Clippers jersey on, but then he has on the mean Rusev face.
Well, like, usually he has his medal on, too.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It's hilarious. Like, it's just, they just do all these great American touristy things that should be completely out of character, but then they tweet all...
They do it, and then they talk shit about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But then Lana will post pictures of her and her friends in bikinis, like, at the Mandalay Bay in Vegas.
Yeah.
Just completely break kayfabe.
Yeah.
But then she'll still use the hashtags like, you know, America's stupid or something like that.
It's just hilarious that they seem to hang out together, like, when they're on the road. Like, I mean, they probably obviously travel together. But it's like they're always like whenever she shows pictures like at clubs, if it's not just her and her friends, like it's her and Rusev like at a bar, which is like there's been a couple of those, which is hilarious because it's like, hey, well, you know, I don't know. It's just to me, that's funny. It reminds me of the old days when they used to go on the road in character, you know, like nobody would break character.
he was pretty good in this match. I enjoyed him.
Yeah.
He jumped through a table, which was silly, but fun. And I count that as one of Ziggler's takedowns.
Yeah, I love that when he just jumped through the table. That was great.
I said this in a previous one. That is like, you know, a boss when the boss runs you and you got to dodge out of the way at the last second and then you can hit him. That's exactly what that was.
Yeah.
It's always weird to me when they do a spot like that. And in this case, Rusev was counted out. And then Ziggler is outside of the ring for literally 5 minutes after that, recuperating from that spot. And he didn't get counted out at all.
Yes, because it's counting outs are done by the referees and the recipes? The recipes are powered by recipes. I don't know. I entirely lost my thought because I'm an idiot. Carry on without me.
There's a lot going on. I love that it was Ziggler. Like, Ziggler was just on the, like, you know, Cena got eliminated, which is great, of course.
Cena got eliminated, which is the best bit about that was the guy in the Santa costume behind.
Yeah.
Because the guy in Santa costume behind didn't see it. He was talking to his mate, and he looks up and just does this great, like, almost triple take. Like, what?
he was sporting the Ziggler stand-up. Like, he had a giant stand-up thing.
Oh, yeah.
A cardboard cutout of Ziggler.
Yeah, cardboard cutout. Yeah.
I didn't expect the picture heel turn when it happened, which was interesting. And taking out Cena was a properly good, shocking moment.
Yeah. Yeah,
which I wasn't expecting, and it was a very good. The whole match was things I wasn't expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And then even Ziggler, like Ziggler's comeback,
it was so well done.
It was so freaking well done,
because
it was then 3-1, and it's like we all know. Okay, there's going to be a fight. It's going to be dramatic, but the next sequence just went down to perfection. Like Ziggler and all the false finishes, all the. Yeah, it was just really well. Let's see, he pinned Kane with the zigzag. All of Ziggler's finishers are executed so well.
Yeah,
they're so freaking well done.
He does a great famouser.
The zigzag is a good move.
Super kick's great.
The thing about his moves are that only somebody as athletic as him can do those and make them look really good.
Yeah,
because like the zigzag shouldn't be a pretty looking move, but he makes it look like the most chaotic move. that there is. He makes the because he can get so much height. The Famouser is great.
Yeah.
He sells it with the fact he's still injured and battered. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't just jump up. I'm full energy. Oh, we're back down to here now. He does it as sort of that. This is my final attack. Oh God, I hope this works. Sort of.
And then when Triple H went crazy and just started tossing refs left and right, I thought that was great. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. And then, of course, the big moment, Sting comes out. And I thought, going into this, I thought for sure, if anybody was going to come out and interfere with this, it's going to be Orton or maybe Sheamus. But the fact that it was Sting and they didn't just have Sting come out and say, hey, buy 2K15 and then wait until the Royal Rumble to set up a match.
He comes out in pink face paint and goes, cancer's bad.
Exactly.
And then just that would be great.
It was fucking great. It was absolutely amazing. Because he came out and I was just completely marked.
Yeah, you lost your shit.
I lost my shit. Because I'm like, wait, this is how you bring somebody out. This is how you do it.
Yeah. I had absolutely no idea it was coming out.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Did it leak before? I mean, I don't pay much
attention.
Yeah, it did. It leaked that he was going to be there. But it didn't necessarily leak what his role was going to be. Like, there was speculation all over that he might do this, he might do that, but he was going to be there. And then there was speculation that Orton was going to be there. There was a rumor that he was going to be there. There was a rumor that... I don't think I saw a rumor about Sheamus. Nobody cares about Sheamus.
No.
But there was a rumor that Orton... And I thought, you know, Orton was very heavily involved in the storyline from the get, and I thought it would make sense for him to come out. And so I... But I loved it. And it didn't... Who knows what his motivation's going to be? I don't know. But Sting coming out, I thought was fucking great. It was fantastic.
It was a great one. I'm glad it wasn't Cena that came out. Why didn't Cena come out? When Triple H was kicking the shit out of Ziggler, you're like, Cena, this is the time Cena comes out, surely.
I think that's just Cena's Cena's new gimmick, is that he makes friends but never helps them. Because that's been his thing. Like, you know, whenever Team Authority needs help, say what you will about Team Authority, they seem to be on the same page. Like, whenever they always gang up on people. Team Cena? Cena didn't help anybody.
Oh, my God. Cena's a heel, but he's a secret heel. Exactly. He's turned and we didn't notice.
He's just a selfish bastard heel. That's his gimmick. Well,
even remember back in the day when he was buddies with Zack Ryder?
Yeah.
It was kind of the same thing then.
Yeah. He would never help. He never helps anybody. That really should be. That would be the greatest slow burn in the history of heel moves. It's like, don't you guys know I am a heel already? I never help anybody.
they go into his room and he's just got like 16-time champion painted in blood all across his wall everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, I will do it. Yeah. But no, that was I like how I've threatened Triple H in WWE 2K15 after this was my plan. I was just gonna go and beat him up for betraying. Great Ziggler match though. Ziggler came out of that looking so endlessly strong.
Oh, yeah.
Huge. Oh, yeah. Huge. Yeah. They have booked like that is the perfect booking for him and the people love it and it's just
But he's taken the Cena spot. That was overcoming the odds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's Cena's thing.
And he does it. He does it so much better than Cena does it.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a rag doll who just can't be pinned. That's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And he sells his damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. He does.
That's why he's one of my favorites, is he is dead.
Yeah.
He dies several times per match. And like at the end when he's there going, oh my God, I've died at the end of the ramp. And then Cena just walks on. Ah, lovely day. I'm John Cena. And then does the hand-holdy uppy thing. My brain went, that's passing the torch. He's the new Cena. I'd be happy.
And then
there was
the breakdown of Triple H and Stephanie. Stephanie especially in the ring.
Made superb by the crowd.
Yeah.
Singing hey, hey, goodbye. Yeah. And you got fired as a chant.
Yeah.
That crowd nailed that moment. It wasn't just all silence and stuff. It was a proper...
Yeah.
Even when she went full Ultimate Warrior, started shaking the top.
She did. She totally did. She started hitting the ropes. That was great. Yeah. I loved it. That was WWE pay-per-view done right.
It was.
At least
well,
it was the main
event. A main
event
done right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been going at it for 55 minutes. I think it might be time for our book of the match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's run down the Survivor Series of 1998, which was another
Deadly
pay-per-view from front to back done correctly.
Yeah.
Dan, what were your thoughts on Survivor Series 98?
Many thoughts. The main one was the first half of this pay-per-view could have been spread out the month before because they rushed so many matches through this. Like, this match had... It almost had like three times as many matches as the one we just watched. There were 14 matches in this one. which is a very large amount, for especially considering I don't sort of know some of the people that came out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
there were some things, and Mankind was in a tux and Vince was in a wheelchair, and it was, and everybody in the audience had severed doll heads, and I wasn't quite sure why.
See, this is the best thing about Book of the Match, is that we get to experience what it's like to just, because we know all that stuff already. Mm-hmm. To hear somebody else describe, there's a bunch of severed doll heads in the audience. Well, that's Al Snow and Head. He did that in ECW, and we're not entirely sure why, but that was his thing in ECW. He was a crazy guy.
Yeah. But there was Mankind came out as Hardcore Champion. What the hell's a Hardcore Champion? Was that the one that I saw where they sort of did it backstage and stuff?
Yeah.
Where Vince gave him the belt?
That was originally a joke. That was just part of the storyline. Vince came up with that title. He gave it to Mankind as sort of just to placate him and be like, you're the Hardcore Champion. But then they turned it into an actual title that was defended. The gimmick was it was defended 24/7. So anybody can run up to you, try to pin you. As long as they had a referee, they could pin you, and then they would be champion. Didn't matter where, didn't matter when.
I like that as an idea. I want that back. Yeah. I'd love to see something like that.
It was pure chaos. At WrestleMania 2000, they had a hardcore battle royal. Mm-hmm. I think it was just a time limit.
Yeah.
And the belt, I swear, changed hands 20 times during the course of that match.
Yeah.
It went all over the arena.
Yeah, it was great.
I'd love that. A belt that is meaningless. Essentially, it's got no prestige, no real power to it. It changes hands twice an episode. It's just fun. I quite like it. I think that would be a really nice... Because normally when they do the lighter things, we get the Adam Rose and Bunny sort of stuff. I'd like it if it was some sort of, here's a constant 24-hour championship.
Yeah.
Where you can have silly backstage segments.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun.
So Mankind, it started off with Mankind defeating Gilbert.
Yep.
Dwayne Gill.
Oh, right. That just clicked together.
You just put it together, huh?
Yeah. I mean, because all I've written is Mankind versus... it's over. That's all I got to type out.
Mankind punched him once, and then that was it.
That was sort of it. The pyro made him jump. Oh, God. Oh.
Yeah.
That was a wonderful thing. Yes.
Then we had Al Snow with Head defeated Jeff Jarrett.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that explained the head. I was like, okay. The something I noticed about that match was there's a lot of rope moves. The guy was doing a lot of... together, they were doing a lot of like throwing people's neck on the ropes. And like you don't really see a lot of stuff like that nowadays. I've not seen a lot of stuff like that. It was a lot of, here's a rope move. It's a strange thing to say. Like, because I always think whenever someone gets thrown on, like, neck first on the ropes, I'm like, oh, dear God, because that's when it's a lot more difficult to fake. And, oh, that looks horrible. Oh, God. But seeing it, like, a load of times in this was like, whoa, that's just, and no one really cared in the audience. I was like, okay.
They were so much more reckless back then. Like, they didn't really care. All right, I mean, if they cared, they didn't bother to show it in the mat, like on screen. They just, you know, there was a lot more reckless. Like back then, it was chair shots to the head were just the thing, because they didn't know that does serious brain damage.
Or if they knew, they didn't care.
Yeah. I mean, nobody real. I mean, you know, it's just sort of a recent thing that all the actual studies are out saying this does permanent, lasting brain damage.
The study saying getting hit on your head by a metal thing traveling at high
speed. You
wouldn't think it would require medical studies.
So then Steve Austin.
That was good. No, because there was that match, like the Jeff Jarrett versus Al Snow, ended with a guitar versus a wooden head.
Mm-hmm.
They were like a stand-up, and I was like, am I watching wrestling or am I playing Saints Row? Because I don't know anymore.
That's a good point. That, like, Attitude Era was just very Saints Row meets wrestling. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah, it was all, there was a lot of just dark humor and laughing at itself type stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Stone Cold Steve Austin and Big Boss Man.
Yes, the Kane of this match, of this entire pay-per-view. He's got his corporate Kane, Big Boss Man. Because he interfered with 90% of the matches. Also, he was dressed like the Shield, which threw me. And I was like, what's going on? I don't know anymore.
That's why it's great to hear your notes, because I never even thought about that. But he totally is dressed like the Shield.
Yeah.
He came out for some reason. I think he used to have like the old, like, the southern evil sheriff guy gimmick.
Oh yeah, back in his first run.
In his first run in WWF. And then he went to WCW. Then he came back as basically the same character, just updated in sort of SWAT gear.
Yeah.
So they kept it consistent. You have to appreciate that.
Yeah.
He got a promotion to the SWAT team, which is weird because he was a fat guy. So.
Right, this match had two noticeable things in it, two very noticeable things. One, I think it was my first ever Austin match that I've ever seen. Like, my first full match in one of these. So, and Austin, when he gets in, he just explodes in the ring. Austin comes in full energy, let's do this.
Yeah.
But the other thing was, he fell into the 619 position. He fell with two arms on the ropes. I'm like, what? Ray's not even in the ring. I didn't know that was possible.
You thought slumping on the second rope was only for the 619.
Yeah, I've never seen it outside of a Rey Mysterio match. It happened in there.
That was one of the cool things about Stone Cold. He made the ring his house.
Yeah.
You know, like he would just laze around on the rope sometimes. He would do whatever he wanted to. Like, that was his ring. It was awesome.
Raven used to do that as
well. Raven would do that as well. Yeah, Raven's the other guy to do that big time. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
X-Pac versus Steven Regal.
Or as I call it, X-Pac versus a man in a hat, because I missed the name.
Was that when they were doing the... that was when they were doing the...
That must have been pre-Man's Man.
Was he wearing the...
He was dressed as a lumberjack construction worker thing.
Oh, and it was the Man's Man. Okay.
Is this the Regal that I know? The NXT... Oh, okay. Because I actually wrote down, I don't know if it's his brother or if he did sort of a... He's done sort of a Freaky Friday switch with Triple H at some point, and he got the posh gimmick, and Triple H got the man gimmick. I didn't know if they swooped at some point. But
That was a relatively short-lived gimmick that Regal did.
That was funny.
It was hilarious, because they preceded it with all sorts of awesome video packages of him, like, doing manly things.
Yeah, he was cutting wood, I think.
He was cutting wood, working at a construction site, everything that real men do.
And he had a great theme song.
Yeah, he's a man, such a man. Yeah, he was great.
And one of them was the European champion, which I didn't even know was a belt.
Oh, yeah. They had that back then, yeah.
They had that back then.
And now they don't. It's
who was
the
first one? It was
Shawn Michaels.
No, it was Davey Boy.
Bulldog, yeah. Shawn
I think Bulldog had it first, and then Shawn Michaels won it from him in England, like right after
that makes sense, yeah.
I don't know how they even came up with it. But, X-Pac, what did you think of X-Pac?
It was okay. I was entirely, the whole match, I was just going, is this the guy that I know? I'm trying to see Regal's face.
I love that whenever you watch an old pay-per-view, it's just you doing the math in your head, like, wait a second, I know this guy. Well, you're not really paying attention to the match. You're like, I know who this guy is. Is that the same
sometimes
guy?
You have to, because I'm there going, because I have like a fragment in knowledge, and I'm just trying to fill in gaps. I was like, is he? Because he wasn't called, because he's William Regal, isn't he?
That's right. Yeah.
But
yeah.
In this, he was Steven Regal, which is what threw me. He was introduced as Steven Regal.
I forget the. I think maybe they just Larson. Do you remember that sequence? Was what was he in WCW? Steve Regal, right?
Yeah, he was Lord Steven Regal.
Lord Steven Regal, and then he came over to the WWF again, or he came over to WWF, and
well, he switched between them like three times the course of like 5 years because because when I first started watching wrestling again in the mid 90s, he was in WCW.
Yes, right.
And
right.
Then he jumped ship to WWF, and then when I was reading up on the Survivor Series, it said after this he went back to WCW.
Really? Okay.
Which I don't remember.
Yeah. I don't remember
but
that
then
either.
Eventually came back to WWF. So
man, that guy was on 1 year contracts, I guess.
Maybe
that's weird. And then we had this could have been interesting, Dan. Ken Shamrock versus Goldust, a guy that's still wrestling.
Yeah, I didn't think Goldust had been around that long. I don't pay much attention to Michael Cole. I assumed Goldust was a new person who came along to help out Cody Rhodes at some point. And I was like, it's his brother, and I was like, oh, okay, it's his brother. apparently Goldust has been around for ages.
He's been around since the early 90s.
But also kind of the same.
He was a rookie in, I want to say, 92.
Yeah.
In WCW. Dustin Rhodes. And they are, in fact, brothers. They're the sons of Dusty Rhodes. Yep. The legendary Dusty Rhodes.
He's got he had a different gimmick back in the day. He was much more kinky and strange.
Yeah, was his deal. Was like he pushed the Attitude Era as far as it can go. He was ambiguous. He did the possibly gay thing quite a bit, making everybody feel as uncomfortable as possible. He would come out in like lingerie.
Yeah,
he was. They pushed the envelope, and then eventually, they turned him into like towards the end of the Attitude Era. When they decided to stop going that route, they turned him into a complete comedy character with like a really weird stutter He got electrocuted. It was weird. They teamed him up with Booker T, and he had gotten into an electrical accident of some sort, and he had a stutter after that. And it was just, it was hilarious. It was weird and dumb and non-consequential. It was hilarious, though. But back then, he was hot shit. He was definitely like, you know, they pushed him. They pushed the limits with his character.
Yeah.
Oh, there was two other things. One is that Goldust, was his finisher just a kick to the balls on the corner?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Which is apparently a DQ. Now, DQ in this entire pay-per-view was a very hazy topic.
Well, you can kind of say the same for wrestling in general.
In this one, there were chair shots and no one was DQ'd. And I'm just there going, what? It's like, oh, it was a chair shot to the chest. That's not a DQ. And it was very confusing. But apparently kicking somebody in the balls is a DQ. Which is just, and I the other thing was when he came out as Shamrock, I thought that was like the sort of a Gilbert type thing, and he was a fake version of Rock because it's Shamrock. And I thought he'd come out and it was just be like someone with a fake glued on eyebrow and stuff, and I was like, because I was staring at him like, oh, I don't get it, I don't get the character, and then I just realized it was the dude's name.
You didn't get his character. I don't understand Ken Shamrock. I don't get it. It was just his name. It was just a guy.
Yeah, I just thought it was a Shamrock, you know, because the Rock was there, and you said this was the Rock's big thing, and I thought it was like a fake Rock, but no.
Yeah, no, he was just one of the founding fathers of like UFC. He was
the first big, the first big name UFC fighter. Him and like Hoist Gracie, and Tank Abbott, who was in WCW for a little bit.
Yeah, he's sort of the forerunner to the Brock Lesnar model of going to the. Well, I guess Brock was in WWF first, but. Going from WCW or WWF to wrestling to MMA and back and forth and stuff. That was Shamrock. Shamrock was okay. Like Shamrock, he could have been okay if he had any personality. Like he was a super wrestler.
He just couldn't talk.
He couldn't talk for shit. Like he was so boring.
Yeah.
But in the ring, he had plenty of charisma.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So
I remember once he got one huge pop, and that's when he turned, I think, on the corporate ministry or the corporation or whoever the original authority was the corporation, I guess.
Yeah.
I remember once he joined the Union, which is a faction with Regal and a couple other working man type guys. And then I remember the corporation was everywhere, and then he turned on them, and he got one huge pop. And it was the only time in his life, I think, that he got a massive crowd pop. And then that was it. Never again.
Yep.
Aww. But and then The Rock defeated the Shield's grandpa, the Big Boss Man.
Yep.
That's the Shield's grandpa? Because it was supposed to be Triple H, wasn't it? She was like, it's Triple H!
Yeah.
But then it wasn't.
It was supposed to be Triple H, yeah.
Yeah, I thought Triple H's gimmick was he was just like two old men. Two men came out and I was like, oh, that's an interesting gimmick. But apparently not. Was Triple H, Triple H, angry Triple H, or Triple H, posh Triple H at this point?
He was already angry, yeah. He was.
Oh, okay,
This is DX Triple H.
Was he still with DX, or had they broken up already?
I believe he was still with them.
Okay.
And that was the fastest match ever in the history of WWE or whatever it was. Yeah, four seconds.
Yeah.
And considering you have to get a three count, that's an impressive 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Particularly one second match.
1 second match, yeah, exactly. What did you think of The Rock?
In those 4 seconds, he's good at pinning people.
Oh yeah, he didn't have much.
My first impression was okay.
then we had the Undertaker versus Kane, which they probably fought.
Every two weeks they had a match.
They fought at that WrestleMania 6 months before, so that was probably still just an ongoing thing. I guess I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a very very punchy match. Lots of punching and lots of. They're both. It was like punch, 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 punch. That's actually one of my general notes. It's just the word punch several times.
Yeah.
I like the Undertaker just glaring at the referee and the referee just backing off and just like running away.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's had the character forever. Yeah. I thought they chokeslam each other. They got into a chokeslam position together, and I was like, chokeslam each other. I don't know how the physics would work.
They both just jump at the same time, I guess. I'm not sure how that
works. Yeah, and then they just fall back. That would have been great. Or they just levitate into the air, and we just discover perpetual motion. But yes.
Let's see here. Then Mankind beat Al Snow.
Yep.
Any notes on that one?
Well, this was apparently like 50-something minutes in. So we're already at match 8, an hour in. Two matches we got in the other one.
Yeah,
exactly. I didn't see Taker or Kane leave the ring was the first note I had. I was like, because the match started so quickly after the other one ended. Just imagine that just as they're doing the entrance, just walking past. Excuse me, I'm the Undertaker. Excuse me. Yeah. It was very weird. Mankind in a Tux is my favorite thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
In this paper.
Yeah.
I will
because
out,
he was great. Trying to be the corporate champion. Like, that was the whole buildup was we thought that McMahon was going to have Mankind be his.
Yeah, he was being groomed to be the corporate champion.
His champion. Like, because Stone Cold was not a corporate, you know, lapdog.
Yeah.
He wanted somebody that was a corporate lapdog, basically. And that was the ruse was we all thought, okay, he's grooming Mankind. That's what he's gonna be the champion.
Mm-hmm.
So then following that, The Rock defeated Ken Shamrock in an 8-minute match.
Ooh.
So that went a ways.
Yeah, I like that. I really enjoyed it. That was like the first match I was like, hey, that's a really good match.
Yeah.
That was genuinely good. There was a ridiculously close kick out in that match.
Was it The Rock? The Rock would usually wait until 2 9/10.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, there was one I was like, I believe it was The Rock, but it was a ridiculously close.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And Bossman turned up again, being Kane, doing his Kane.
Yeah.
Corporate Bossman, yeah.
Then I have a note. There was a Paul Bearer thing. Paul Bearer is amazing. Like, I've not seen
him.
Yeah,
he was great. He was fantastic.
He was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Yes.
Sable beat Jacqueline. Jacqueline.
Ah, I didn't write the name. I put down Sable versus a girl whose name I missed.
Yeah. Jackie, she showed off her boobies on accident once.
Ooh.
Like they came popping out. I forget which pay-per-view it was, but
yeah, she had a wardrobe malfunction.
That's right. Those things. That's what I remember about Jacqueline. She was funny though. She was cool. I liked her. Her and Mark
Merrill, she was great.
Her and Mark Merrill were really good together.
Yeah.
Yep. Did Sable execute her power? Her Sable bomb.
Sable bomb. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
On a guy, I believe that was on the side.
Oh, yeah, it was on Mark Merrill.
On Mark Merrill. Yeah, her ex-husband. Yeah. Her legit ex-husband. Yeah.
I bet that was fun today.
Yeah. I know. Right. Then let's see. Mankind beat Stone Cold. What happened in that match? That was 10 minutes long.
It was. They had one of my favorite ever wrestling moments in that match because it was that was McMahon interfering and stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the Stone Cold took off Mick Foley's shoe and hit him around the face with it, and wasn't DQ'd. And there's me going, is that a DQ? Normally, if you're kicking someone, technically it's the same thing.
You're paying attention to the rules far too much.
Well, in the last match, in the Shamrock, was it Shamrock versus Rock? No, it was the Mankind versus Al Snow. Al Snow got the hit chair shots and wasn't disqualified.
Yeah.
And the ref was right there, and it's like, do that again, I'm disqualified. Yeah, I was like, it's two chair shots. What is this? It was a weird thing. But yeah, there was. And in that match, Mankind versus Stone Cold. I believe it was Mankind, fell into the 619 position again.
Uh-oh.
Just saying, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Rey Mysterio was still firmly in the WCW camp at this point.
Yeah. It was just prepared. This is how they sold, Vince sold Rey over. This is how important it was. Like, look at all these wrestlers you could kick in the face.
They're all just there waiting for you, Rey.
Yeah.
Okay, sign me up, Vince.
Yeah, and that was a really nice. Vince played a really nice heel. Like, that's one of my first shots seeing him.
Yeah,
he was the best.
Because he's not like the Triple H in your face aggressive. He's just kind of a dick, and I like that.
That was his thing. He was just an asshole. He was an asshole boss who couldn't relate to that.
Yeah.
There was. I love that he got his taunt is he can just pixel his hands at will. Oh, Steve Austin, he's like, my hands are now pixels.
Well, that was that was the great thing about whatever WWF game it was that THQ did back in the day on the N64, the first one, I mean, all of them.
Oh, WrestleMania 2000.
WrestleMania 2000, whenever Stone Cold would give his taunt, which was the middle fingers, they would pixelate it. It was great.
Yeah, they'd blur it out,
It was fantastic. Let's see, The Rock beat The Undertaker by disqualification.
Yep. Which one was the match with the really world's most gentle chair shot in? I think it was actually the one before. It's how they took out Mankind. Not Mankind, how they took out Stone Cold. There was, like, someone gave, I think it was Stone Cold, the weakest chair shot I've ever seen. Like, just sort of like, and then he's like, oh, he's been killed! I was like, he hasn't.
At that point in his career, Stone Cold was so banged up that they really had to protect him as much as they could.
Yeah.
But
he legit broke his neck, so.
Yeah. Well, Owen Hart legit broke his neck.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that on the old history. I'm learning it.
And then we had the New Age Outlaws beat D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry and the Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher, who were pretty inconsequential themselves.
Yeah, and the whole match was everybody going, the commentator team going, we don't understand the rules. What's happening? Who's in? I don't know. Which, to be fair, was pretty much what they were doing in the four-way in the five series we just watched as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nobody knows the rules to these matches. I couldn't follow who was supposed to be active in that match. All I've got for that is match 13, a tag team thing. And yeah, Mark Henry is big, and I just got very lost.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was a really good age for tag team wrestling, though.
Oh, yeah, it was.
So many tag teams and so many theme tag teams. And they really made, I mean, look at this, this is the second to last match. They really built out the tag division really well back then.
Hmm. And Stark ruined it by today. Doing the weird, weird rules that I couldn't quite follow.
And then, of course, The Rock defeated Mankind to become the corporate champion.
Mm-hmm.
Which was one of the biggest swerves, because The Rock at that point was a pretty massive up and coming baby face.
He was like Stone Cold Jr. in terms of how he was being built up. I mean, like the corporation was treating him kind of on par with Stone Cold.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a swerve many people, including us, when we were watching it in college, did not see coming.
We were like, holy shit, and it made complete sense. And then the next night, he delivered a great promo where his motivation was completely spelled out, and it made total sense. He was like, you know what? I came in
Die, here. Rocky, die.
I think I'd forget that. Exactly. Like,
it was great.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was a really good match as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
those two had great matches.
They didn't swerve with a kick or a punch. They swerved with a hug.
Yeah.
Attitude Era swerving with hugs. and Mankind looked really sad, and it made me depressed.
Yeah. Apparently he's
so
doing
sad. I was like, oh.
He's doing DDP yoga now.
Yep.
He's in the house with DDP.
Yep.
Ooh.
Doing the yoga. So we're going to see a slimmed down Mankind, perhaps.
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully, for his own sake.
Well, apparently, Mick Foley does not have any operable discs in his spine anymore, so.
That's fucked up.
So, well, remember reading this book where, this is back like in the 90s still, where he went to the doctor for back pain, and they took an x-ray, and there was one gap between his vertebrae that was white, and all the other ones looked like there was nothing there. Oh. And so Mick Foley said, oh, is that where the problem is, doctor? And the doctor goes, no, that's what they're supposed to look like.
That's where there isn't a problem. Whoa. Everywhere else is problem.
Yeah.
So you have one disc that works. Oh, all of them are gone otherwise.
Imagine
being in his body for a day. Ugh.
I'd rather not, thanks. So The Rock came out, and then Stone Cold came out and wins. Sorry, Stone Cold came out and won everything. He didn't. He killed everyone and won, which was weird.
So what were your overall thoughts of a pay-per-view from 1998?
It's very different. It was very, very different, just simply just due to the sheer... It felt like they pushed almost too much into the... And it's 3 hours. They pushed a lot into it, because it was just like every single match was telling a story and following off something, and it all built up to the main middle one. So it was ridiculously well set up, ridiculously put together... I can't remember any of the wrestling, just simply because the storylines were done so well. And it's storylines I now genuinely actually cared about. Where they go, what? What's this? And this? And this? They set up pretty well.
Yeah.
It was impressive. Yeah. It was very impressive.
Yeah, it was the perfect storytelling pay-per-view, absolutely.
It
was a little intense for the storytelling. I think they did fit. I mean, it was 14 matches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could have trimmed it down a few. I mean, because they did actually trim out a few of them. Start maybe one extra Raw given to some of the matches just to clean up some of the early ones. Get yourself an extra half an hour to make some of the rest of the stuff happen.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it's pretty good. I had fun with it. Much better than last time.
So what are we going to do for next time?
Next month is TLC, right?
TLC, yeah.
Should we do something TLC theme? Not necessarily a TLC pay-per-view, but just at least something with the TLC match.
Are you thinking WrestleMania 2000?
We could do that. We talked about the Hardcore Battle Royal in it. That was the first WrestleMania I've ever been to.
All right. Well, Dan, you've expressed interest in the Hardcore Belt. We have TLC coming up, so maybe the next book of the match shall be WrestleMania 2000.
Sounds good to me.
Are we good?
I look forward to it.
And the good thing is, Dan, you'll have a little bit of context, because this is only 2 years earlier, less than 2 years earlier, this Survivor Series that you just watched.
Yeah.
So then you'll get to see a little bit of how all that panned out 2 years down the line.
Yep.
Ooh, it's going to be fun. I'm excited.
I know.
And,
it'll be
and,
fun
at this and, point. Bizarrely, I'm also excited for Raw, because I've never had a WWE without the Authority, really. I don't know what it's like without it. Because
yep,
what I currently watch is always at the Authority. Removing those is now a different thing. I'm lost. Well, I don't know. Who's the bad guy? What are we going to do? What's best for business? I don't know anymore.
What's best for business now?
Sting. Sting is best for business.
Sting is best for business. At least last time.
Sting is best for business. Yep.
Yep. All right. Well, that'll be next time in 3 weeks. So,
3 weeks.
We'll talk to you guys then, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.